What is good? Welcome to a brand new episode of No More Heroes. I'm your host, Andy Malafrina. With me is the very special guest, the menace himself. Welcome. 1/5 or 6th? I always forget how many you are of Tower Gang. It is the Toad.
Yeah, what's
how
up,
you doing,
man?
Buddy?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fucking great. I'm very excited to have you on this podcast. I was on Tower Gang, and now I've talked to Jose, I've talked to Clint. I'm making my way through Tower Gang, and I've been wanting to have you on, but I was like, what do we talk about? What do we do? And then I saw you were causing a ruckus at LP Georgia.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good place to start. All right. Now I know a lot of people out there are looking at your candidacy as a bit of a joke. I find that downright awful of a perspective. But what made you want to get into this and do the whole presidential thing?
I don't know if I necessarily wanted to do it, but it started out just like kind of just off the cuff, like, fuck yeah, I guess I'll do it, because it happened at Pork Fest last year, and Ben Weir from the Emo Caucus from LP New Hampshire was like, yo, do you want to be like the Emo Caucus representative and run for president, like under that banner? And I was like, sure, all right, why not? Like, I didn't really think about it, because I'm looking, and we actually had the other candidates from the presidential field were actually there at Porkfest this past year. So it was Mike Termott and Chase Oliver were both there. And I'm looking at that, and I'm like, they don't have anybody who's like representing what we set out to do in Reno in 2022, the Reno reset. I'm like, really, we're going to put up a guy who's a cop and... I don't know, a faggot, basically. Like, I don't want to get you nuked or anything. Maybe I should control myself. But I'm like, is that really what we want?
Nah, man, live your truth, Toad. I don't want to censor you at all. I'll just, know, this might be a Rumble exclusive, depending on how many more you throw out. But you be you.
I want it to stay up, but I can't help myself. So I said, yeah, I'll do it. Like, I'm like, these guys don't represent the Ron Paul wing of libertarianism, so I'll just do it. Then, of course, Josh Smith announced, like, right after that. So then he's in the field now as well. And since then, the Mises Caucus went with Michael Rechtenwald, and they decided to not back my candidacy. I have no idea why.
Dude, it's a mystery to everyone.
Yeah. But I think, like, just what I did at Georgia, I don't know. I think maybe that showed some people that, like, there was some seriousness behind this, like, from the outset. Like, I wanted to have, like, kind of just a ridiculous, like, platform that I was running on, but and make it all, like, really shitposty, but also have it be, like, serious, like, have serious ideas behind it as well. It's just that, like, how do you attract, like, attention? How do you attract people to actually, like, come over to libertarianism or to this messaging? Because really, it's about messaging, because you're not going to win, obviously. So how do you do that? Well, what you have to do is you just have to, like, just talk like a normal person, basically, and talk to the people. And that's what I'm trying to do, and just do basically what I do on Twitter and just shit post just in real life, pretty much. And that is the campaign. Just don't filter yourself, and don't be afraid to say anything. Essentially, don't be a politician.
Mm. Yeah, no, I get that concept, just because you see it a lot of times. Like, you'll see it when politicians get asked questions and they'll do some long roundabout thing, or they'll just bob and weave to something else. And you see it a lot with like cops interaction with people, a lot of like government associated shit, where it's just, you're like, dude, this isn't how, I've never met someone who talks to someone else like this, in this way. Were you implementing that, like, during the debate? I didn't get to catch a lot of clips from the debate, but I definitely, like, I know Jacob Hornberger was getting up his ass about shit. Did you see a lot of people, especially too, you're going out there being the shoeless wonder, did you get a lot of people looking at you like, what the fuck's up with this guy?
Yeah, some out of the like 50 people who were even there.
Yeah.
Some people, yeah, it was a mix between like, what the fuck is going on here? But I think, like, as soon as I started speaking, at least, like, I was getting a reaction from the crowd that was mostly like laughter. So that is kind of what I wanted, even though, like, I don't necessarily want to say that I'm being unserious, but the way that I, like, pose these answers is going to make people laugh. But I think that's good, because that's like, they're going to start paying attention to you if you do that. And you have all these like boring guys next to me who are just spewing like libertarian ideology shit, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like, nobody's going to listen to that. Nobody cares.
Well, so I remember I was laughing when I saw you post, I'm running for president. I'm like, okay, part of Tower Gang, Toad, he's running for president. That'll be entertaining. But then there is this thing that I see all you guys do where you, like, present yourself as this, like, you know, quasi-edgelord shit poster, whatever you want to call it, where you're just, like, causing a ruckus. And then people, like, roll their eyes and look down at you. But then at the same time, it's like, if you're going up in a debate and it's like, okay, you guys think we fucking suck ass, but if we're also making you guys look like chumps, like, right. Clint basically had Jacob Hornberger completely, like, fucking crumble. You know what I mean? And then I saw some clips of you where, you know, it is funny you wearing the fucking baseball tee and you're wearing your shoeless, but at the same time, you're, like, well-spoken and fucking, you know, I feel like you guys are this balancing force to be like, yo, if you guys think these dudes suck ass and they're giving you a run for your money, then what the fuck are you doing? Did you go in preparing in any way, or were you just kind of seeing what happens?
No, I was not prepared in any way. It was just like, I'm going to go in and I'm just going to do exactly what I just said before. I'm just going to not filter myself and just answer, like, honestly. And, like, I know the rest of these guys are probably going to have, like, a politician-y vibe. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to be, like, a regular dude, basically, and just say whatever the fuck I want.
And I got hopefully, you.
I kind of wanted it to be, like, disrupting in a way. And that is what it was. It was... Or disruptive, I guess. Like, people didn't really know. Like, the people up on stage, they didn't know how to handle me, which is what I wanted to happen.
Was the general vibe there the very, like, buttoned up, attempting to sound politician-y? Was that, like, the vibe?
No, not really. I mean, it was in a VFW. I was there, like, the day before. Like, all of Tower Gang got in, like, shortly after I did. We were all there the day before that. We were hanging out at the VFW. A lot of the guys, the guys that... invited us there are from LP Georgia, so some of those guys, they're fans of Tower Gang, so they know, like, who we are. So there was some of that there. There are a few guys who are like that. My first day there, I actually met the chair of LP Georgia and one of the other guys who was, like, doing the tech and stuff, and they were, like, totally, like, down. Like, I got to hang out with them. They were cool dudes. Like, I think they were on board with what I was doing as well. So there was a lot of that, and then I think there was some of the, like, buttoned up, like, politician-y shit too. So you had people that came, like, that wanted to see Jacob Hornberger. You had plenty of people there who wanted to support Chase Oliver because it's his home state, in the state of Georgia there. So it was definitely a mix.
Yeah, that, and I do a lot of comedy shows with Robbie, and I noticed that with, you know, because especially his Porch Store shows are heavy libertarians, obviously. Like, if you're gonna go see Robbie do stand up on a fucking porch, you're definitely a hardcore fan. No, I always joke. I go, it's always a mix. Like, some shows are tough because it's a lot of it's a lot of reserved people who kind of smile and polite laughter, and then it's a lot of, like, unhinged dudes that show up and are fucking being like, "Do you want a gun?" Or no, not really, but I'm trying to make a joke. But you guys get what I'm saying. Like, there's a bunch of, like, dudes who will fucking be like, "Yo, you trying to do mushrooms later or something?" You get that, like, interesting mix. Mm-hmm. With, like, the libertarians and stuff that you wouldn't get, I feel, with the other parties. When you're going into the debates and are you going to be doing more debates?
Yeah, at the very least, I'll be in the Massachusetts one because it is my home state. I did the Georgia one because we made it into a Tower Gang event, so it's like, this is going to be fun. We're just going to go all out. We're going to do it. I've had some invites to a couple of the other ones, but it's like, I'm trying to run a really lean campaign here where I'm not spending money, so I'm, like, turning some of these things down. And I'm just like, nah, I'm going to go to comedy shows instead. I'm just doing other things. Like, the primaries don't even fucking matter, dude. Like, I'll just, when I do a debate, I'll just, like, blow shit up and try to go viral, and then I'll be at the national one and be on the ballot as much as I can, and then I'll be, the primaries, like I said, don't matter at all in the Libertarian Party. Like, they have no effect on anything, really. It's just to gauge, like, what the support is. I don't even know what the fuck the reasoning is behind it.
I feel like the primaries are just sort of get the gauge on the area or whatever, but
yeah,
I guess at the same time it could be like a vetting process for the people. You know, if you have these moments that are, you know, pretty rough and stuff, they can, like, expose themselves before
Oh, yeah. Hornberger's dead because of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Do you because that was like it was funny. I saw the clip and I saw him post like a three-parter on YouTube from driving in his car. And I got to be honest, I usually try to like, I try to be well-versed in the topic, especially if I'm going to watch it on a podcast or I'm going to talk about it on a podcast. But I saw like a 45-minute clip from him sitting in his car, and I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Fuck you. Fuck you, dude.
I don't watch the whole thing either. It's like, you know, it's just going to be some old man autistically ranting. Like, that's like what his vibe is now. It's crazy because he was like a huge name in libertarianism back in the day. But it's like, for him, it's like time stopped in 1990. Like, if you ask him about any current event or anything that's happened like since then, basically he's awful on it, or he doesn't know, he has no idea how to answer. Like, the of course the thing that doomed him in that debate was Clint just asking a simple question about like COVID, and then it was like, well, why haven't you looked into it at all? Like, why?
Like, it was nuts, dude. It was literally like, and he tried to hide behind the whole vax status question, where he's like, oh, you're trying to shame me because I took the vaccine. And it's like,
yes,
no,
we are.
Yeah. But honestly, the crux of it, from what I gathered, was like that was almost an aside, like, haha, dork. But like the bigger element of it was almost like, bro, you have no opinion about the origins of COVID?
Right.
Like, just as a dude, you don't have one opinion. That's why I was like, thank God Clint talked about it, because I was not going to sit through that.
Yeah. The other hilarious fucking video. When we showed up on Saturday, so this was like right before the debate was going to happen, basically like Saturday afternoon, like an hour before the debate or whatever, we show up and Jacob Hornberger is like down the street a little bit from where the VFW is, and he's like on the phone wearing a suit, but he's like walking like into the woods. Yeah, it's so fucking weird, dude. He's just like a crazy old man walking in the woods at this point.
Yeah. Dude, it's interesting, man, because I believe Dave endorsed him like a while ago, and now
he was
like
the
one
Mises
time
caucus,
a while ago.
He was the Mises Caucus like endorsed candidate the previous election cycle in 2020.
Yeah,
somehow.
And then like you see him now, where you're like, but honestly, it's like you say there's no point of the primaries. This is a good weeding out process, because it's like if Clint just goes, hey, what do you think about the origins of COVID? And he goes, how dare you?
Right.
It's like a pretty good, weeding out process.
It's
did
a witch
you...
hunt.
Well, yeah, dude, you guys are just these McCarthy era bad guys.
Yeah.
Dude, it was.
Like, that sounds like a compliment to me.
Yeah, just looking for commies.
Yeah, exactly. Get rid of them.
Yeah, I thought his response was wild. I thought his response was wild. Did you go into the debates with I'm gonna get this shit across, or are you more like almost reactionary, like responsive to the guys going on? Were you going in there trying to troll, or were you actually trying to like, you know, talk that real shit?
Oh, I'm a reactionary, man. I'm a neo-reactionary. No, like, I didn't really think about much. Like, I think when I do like some of these public speaking things, like, I don't really think about it. I'm not prepared. Like, I wing this, but I have like an idea of like at least like how I'm gonna like open this thing. And then of course we didn't actually get an official opener in this one, but the opening question actually wound up being like an opener, and I was like, oh, this is sweet. Like, this is, that'll be my opening to actually do my opener, because my opener was gonna be, I at least had that thought in my mind. I'm gonna like open up just by like pointing out like how stuffy and loserish all these people are, and I'm like, that's perfect. Like, I'm gonna say the LP stands for the loser party. So that was gonna be,
yeah.
I had that in my mind at least, that was gonna be my intro, but I had no like preparation other than that. But then the opening, we didn't get an opening. Brad asked the first question, which was like, talk to me like I'm like a guy at a bar or whatever, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. So I'll just answer with like what I was gonna do in my opening, basically, and it worked awesome. And then I was just like, all right, we're off to the races. And then that kind of just like got me in that like mode. And then like with every question, it was just like, I'm gonna give like an answer that I actually believe, but I'm gonna do it in like a way that's gonna like turn heads at least. And I had like my platform in mind, basically, like if any of those questions came up, like the COVID shit, like part of my platform is governors to Gitmo. So I was like, I'm going to throw that one out there into the mix. But Josh actually said it first, knowing that I was going to. So he intentionally stole my thunder. Bastard.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What was some of your, What was some of, like, you think the other candidates' weakest points? Because I know I've heard Chase. I don't know a lot about Chase Oliver. I mean, you've described him very directly earlier, but I don't know a lot about Chase Oliver. But I've heard he's really bad on the trans issue, especially like trans kids and stuff. But like, what were some of the weaker points of the other candidates that you maybe like took advantage of or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, the trans thing unfortunately didn't come up in the debate because that would we'd be able to expose some more things about Chase in that way, because he definitely is a progressive, but with how he's running his campaign, he's actually trying to, like, it seems like he's trying to avoid, like, getting into some of those issues, and he's trying to, like, because he is, like, fine on, like, the war issues and stuff like that, so it seems like with that stuff, like, you're not going to be able to, like, get him, but you want to, like, steer it more towards like some of the culture stuff, and then that's where you can get him. Like in this, his weakest point in this debate was over the COVID shit and like the reason why he got the vaccine. And Josh really got him frustrated with how he responded to that. And then I kind of got in there into the mix as well and pissed him off. And I just pointed out, like, well, if you're gonna claim to represent like the ideology and the party that, like, first and foremost, we pretty much always believe that, like, the government are a bunch of liars, essentially, and you got duped by, like, their largest propaganda campaign in history, probably. Like, how can we trust you to be, like, the guy here? So that's basically what I said.
Can I ask you about the vaccine shit? Because, like, I'm always interested how dudes respond to the vaccine, because I'll be straight up, I got the vaccine, but with, like, full context to, like, getting the vaccine, I was a much different person back then. I was definitely a libertarian, but I was not as woken up and based as I am now and stuff. So there were definitely aspects where I was naive. I had a lot of social pressure. I also, for as many awful things as I know about the government, I undersold how awful they could be. And I go, they're probably just going to put some fucking saline solution or something in there. They already got the money. And so, but I'll be straight up. If someone asks me, I go, oh yeah, I have a shit ton of regrets about getting the vaccine. It honestly, it's embarrassing. I feel like part of me feels a little bit like a bitch. You know what I mean? Like things like that. And I always find it interesting where now I get it. It's hard, especially too, if like you don't want to give people an in or whatever, but I like what did like, do you find it interesting the pushback from a lot of libertarians that did get the vaccine and don't have the balls to go, mm-hmm. I fucked up. I got duped. I'm wrong.
Yeah, like your answer is definitely better than Chase's by far. Like admitting like, yeah, like I shouldn't have done that. Like I do regret that. Like, fuck. Like,
yeah, you know, I'm not gonna fucking mince words about it. I completely undersold the whole shit.
Yeah, like I got duped, whatever. But Chase tries to like spin in a positive. He's like, no, I don't regret it. I was doing it because I have an immunocompromised mother, and it's like, fuck you, because you're like you're giving up the game if that's your answer. Where you're basically still like you're conceding that like the vax like might have actually been a good thing, and like it actually like you're conceding a lot of the establishment points there by doing that. So, like, I hate answers like he gave there. Like, that was his weakest stuff in the debate. Chase's weakest stuff was all on the COVID shit. And then Hornberger's actually was also on the COVID shit with his complete non-answer on it. But he was even worse because, like, every single one of his answers was terrible in that debate. Hornberger was somehow the worst out of the entire panel there. And I don't even think it was close. Everything he said was just bad. Like, he said that open borders are the issue that defines his entire campaign. And I'm like, that's just going to be like a non-starter for the majority
being
of people.
Being pro open borders?
Yeah. Like, I don't even think it's a libertarian position. And I explained why during that debate. And I think about maybe, I think the only people who agree with me on the borders issue are probably Josh and Rechtenwald. But even so, like, Hornberger was like the most hardcore open borders out of all of them, to the point where, yeah, he's making that like his issue, and I'm like, that is so stupid. Like, even if you believe that open borders is the right position, like, why would you want to focus on that?
When,
yeah, I don't think it's the libertarian position at all, but it's certainly also not popular, and you see what's going on here now, and you're going to say that right at the same time that this Texas border issue is coming up, too, and that was one of the questions in the debate. That's what got us into all the immigration stuff, and I'm like, this is like, this is so bad for Hornberger. Like, this doesn't look good. And then he was focusing on like the Social Security issue way too much. And he was accusing all of us of saying, like, he was accusing all of us of believing that we shouldn't abolish Social Security. I'm like, no, like that's not the case. Like, we obviously all want to abolish it. We just don't agree with like how you would like just instantly abolish it and like fuck everybody over who's already paid into it, because that's his position on it. Basically, we don't agree with that, but we all agree that Social Security shouldn't exist in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah, just, no, you have to live in reality, man.
Yeah, it's weird, man. I'm shocked at how controversial or how divisive the open borders debate is in libertarians. You know, yeah. And yeah, because it's interesting. Do you think, because there is this weird thing with libertarians where I definitely experienced initially, but I feel like I've gotten over it a good amount. Just because I grew up, you're like prototypical college liberal, and I had a very sort of like that soft Republican family where on social issues they're pretty liberal and yeah, it's shit like that. So there was definitely, and you know, a lot of my friends being in comedy, there was definitely a lot of that worrying about what other people think in that context I had to break. But more or less, it's like, I what do you think it is with all these libertarians that like the wanting to impress progressive almost have this like stranglehold over them? Cause like I said, I experienced it for a minute, but it gets to a point where it's like, guys, they don't fucking like you. They don't care. Right. They'll be happy to see you in fucking jail. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, like the core of progressivism is rooted in like egalitarianism, which flies in the face of libertarianism and liberty. As Rothbard has pointed out, probably he's the best one at pointing it out, in egalitarianism as a revolt against nature, where he points out that like just human nature by its default is not egalitarian. Like humans are going to naturally form hierarchies because naturally yeah. people are going to be better at certain things than other people. And that's just the way it is. That's the reality of the human existence. And you're basically just refusing to acknowledge that. And then if you refuse to acknowledge that and you want to actually try to do something about that, the only prescription is going to be force of some kind. So that's why it is in opposition to liberty. But as far as, like, why these people can't get away from that, like, progressive line of thinking, I don't know if it's just that, like, they've always just been a progressive and had that mindset, and they just can't, like, give it up. Like, you know, not wanting to admit that you're wrong and just not wanting to, like, you can't have, like, your entire worldview shattered, essentially. So, like, it was, I think it was easier for me to, like, get into, like, libertarianism because I came from the right. So I was, like, I always was in opposition to, like, socialist economics and stuff. Just I don't know what it was, just inherently I just realized that it didn't make sense and that it was wrong. But then I thought that it was that meant I was a Republican, because I'm like, oh, that's the free market side, right? The Republicans. No, I was wrong. I'll admit that I was wrong. Like, I was 16 when 9/11 happened, and back then in high school and whatever, I bought into the propaganda bullshit that ensued yeah. after that. And then I had to be set straight by a bunch of college liberals in college in Massachusetts. And I was like, you guys are right. Like, you know what I mean? And then I was thinking, like, I'm probably a libertarian, like, but I wasn't really political at all. But I just had that in my mind, like, because I was always pro, like, free speech. Like, I loved, like, offensive comedy. But I was, like, a free market guy. I was a pro-gun guy. So I'm like, what am I? And then it's like, oh, well, that all, like, fits in line with libertarianism. And I eventually, like, started looking into libertarianism more and being like, oh, that is what I actually am.
Did you have, because when I was in college, I was a college liberal because that's what everyone around me was, and I didn't care about politics, so I didn't, like, think about it. And so I just got infected with whatever the popular thing was. But I remember I always still had, like, libertarian tendencies where, like, just understanding, like, well, the government doesn't have a right to do, like, when they started implementing higher minimum wages, I was just like, well, wait, what is it? How can you force someone to pay someone else something, a certain amount? And it would be like little things here and there. I would have libertarian tendencies, but it wasn't until just listening to, you know, hearing people on podcasts and stuff like that, where I was just like, oh yeah, that's, but I got away from my original question. Cause I think the liberal and the progressive shit, like, I grew up in a middle to upper middle class type of environment. And I think when you grow up being like, either not even necessarily rich, but you're good financially, you're chilling, everything's good, you're well off financially with all the shit.
Yeah.
And I think you can humor more of those progressive ideas and shit like that, because it's like you have more money to spend on the extra shit. Because progressivism to me sounds like it's a lot of times like you thinking of like what would be nice, but then the libertarians hop in with their ability to crunch the numbers and go, well, this is what we can do. You right. can't. Yeah.
It's kind of like the like elitist, like, I guess, like liberal point of view is kind of what you're talking about. Although I kind of grew up in a similar situation, but my parents, like, they were like Democrats, sort of. They vote Democrat. My dad definitely does, but he's kind of like, he at least was like an old school Democrat, at least like anti-war, like 70s style Democrat, basically. But he's turned into just like, he believes like all the like corporate media shit, which is bad. And my mom tries to push back on it because my mom like agrees with me on most things at this point. Maybe it's because she's like around me too much. I don't know. But I don't think she was ever really like a progressive necessarily. Cause she always had like some. Both of my parents have kind of like conservative, like cultural values. So it's weird to see my dad going off on this like thing, like, no, like we must like be pro like trans people. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like you're in like a traditional, like family, like nuclear family environment. And that's like what we've known. And like, he comes from like a Christian background. And so does my mom. It's like, I don't know. It's very weird to see, but they do have like a lot of like traditional cultural values that I grew up with in, at home. So
yeah, dude, the way that the trans shit has like gotten into people is like fascinating, because I remember a couple years ago I noticed, I was trying to do a joke about it in my stand-up, where I was like yo, I would go to someone in the audience, I was like, what would you rather tweet out, like the n-word, and not the n-word, like the n-word, or would you tweet out trans women aren't women? And like, people in the audience would be like, that's a tough one. And I'm like, and this was like, dude, this was like 4 years ago. And like that, and you know, you find out the statistics that realistically the statistics are a fraction of a percent. And yeah, dude, and you're talking about your dad getting like wrapped up in trans. It's fascinating. Yeah, especially it's when you
especially when it's like almost 70. It's like, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it's the trans shit fascinates me, because once you break down the fucking, I don't even know if this is the right term, but the science behind it, you're like, oh yeah, dude, you're just lopping dicks off, dude. It ain't there yet. Yeah. It's but yeah, I don't know. That shit's all very interesting and confusing, and psyops upon psyops. But I did want to ask you this, talking about presidential candidates, and I'm sure you've been locked into the whole Dave Smith, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. thing. And, like, I've been noticing there's been a lot. Like, you saw it with Vivek before he dropped out, and you've been seeing it with RFK Jr. with this whole, you know, this one dude couldn't make it in one of the big parties, so now he sees, like, the libertarians, and he's like, I think I'm going to run there so he can get, like, ballot access. And I see a lot of people see that, and they'll be like, yeah, it'll get us, like, 7 to 9%. That's pretty cool. And a lot of people's like, well, he's not a libertarian. So, like, where do you sit on that?
Yeah, I talked about this on Josh Smith's show the other night, too, on Break the Cycle. But I think that there are a few things going on there, at least with why I think like Vivek dropped out as quickly as he did, and why RFK wound up leaving the Democratic Party. And I think that has a lot to do with them being surrounded by a lot of pressure from the people that control those parties. Like, they don't want these guys that have like any like dissenting opinions, dissenting views. They want those guys out, which is unfortunate, because I want those guys in those parties to be like pushing the Overton window in a different direction. Like, if RFK was running as a Democrat, that would be awesome, because he could actually at least pose maybe some sort of challenge to Biden, but he could also get people like on that side of things maybe thinking in a different way about some of the things that he's actually better on than most of the Democrats. Like, there are a couple of things that he's better on. Like, he was at least better on like the war in Ukraine, and of course on like the vaccine shit. But as far as like wanting him to run as a libertarian just because he's going to get a ton of name recognition, and that's going to like get us maybe more votes, maybe not even, I don't even know, and get ballot access, that's just all like political party bullshit, man. I'm opposed to that. Like, if you're running as a libertarian, you know that you're not going to win like a general election. Like, that should never be the goal. That if you think that that is the goal, then you're totally delusional. The goal should be that you want whoever the libertarian nominee is to be able to like use social media, because they're going to get like blackballed. Like, they're probably not even going to get media appearances at this point. They're certainly not going to be in any debates or anything like that against Donald Trump and Joe Biden. That's not going to happen. So you need to like be there on social media and just using social media aggressively and trying to like get your name out there and go viral that way. And it has to be an entirely like a messaging campaign. You're trying to change people's way of thinking.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's I agree. And like another part of it too is like, yeah, you were saying with the ballot access and trying to get the percentage, and it's like, I don't know, man. There's a part of me that if the guy, and this sounds like overly simplified, but it feels like it should be one of the first requirements. If the guy running in the Libertarian Party doesn't identify as a libertarian,
right,
doesn't that just make us like the fucking fat chick at the bar at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
When they're like, oh, I couldn't get primo pussy at midnight, but all those fucking libertarians are in the corner. I'll stick my dick in that pig. Like, doesn't that just make us the fucking, yeah.
It's fucking a lady boy. Like, he at least is like saying that he's a woman, I guess, and has tits. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, that's the other like, The other point here is, yeah, that Robert F. Kennedy is certainly not a libertarian. He is like, some people that identify as libertarians aren't even good libertarians, but RFK is horrible on many, many issues. He's a complete Zionist, so he's terrible on, like, one of the main issues. Like, the major foreign policy issue of the time now is the Israel situation. He's horrible on that. Like, I think he even, like, kind of caves to the establishment, even on, like, the COVID shit, even though he was, like, really good at pointing out a lot of the problems with it. He's good on, like, vaccines specifically, as Josh was pointing out when I was on his show with him. But he does kind of, like, take sort of, like, a step back and kind of, like, just, like, bow to the, like, the regime narrative in a lot of ways, even on that issue. And, of course, he's not, like, a gun rights guy. He's not good on that. He's not good on economics. Like, he's just not good on that much, really.
Yeah, no, he's not, and it's like, and even, yeah, man, he's like, okay, he's okay on certain things, but he's not good on a lot of, like, the core things, so this obsession with getting that number, it's like, dude, I don't know, man, I'd rather someone who fucking throws it at you straight up, is good at talking,
right,
and shit like that. You were talking about, I'm curious about your perspective on this. So going back, keeping on the thought process, talking about like RFK Jr. on Dave's podcast on Part of the Problem. There is that, I'm sure you saw it, the pause heard round the world.
Yeah, I saw that clip. Yeah.
I fucking saw it. I saw, I was listening to Clint too, and he actually timed it out. It was like 8 fucking seconds. It was so fucking,
it seemed long.
Dude, and you might have been on top of this more than I am, but like, has he had this opinion for a while, or did this just magically coincide with, remember that video where he was at the dinner and he was like, the COVID, what was it, like the virus might have focused on Hasids and black people or something like that? I forget what the fuck it was.
Oh yeah, I kind of remember that.
Yeah, and then people were running with that saying like, oh, RFK Jr. said the virus was engineered to not affect Jews or something like that. And I swear to God. be a fun virus. Tunnels would be fun. but no, for real though, like, and then I feel like right after that, I see him on Breaking Points going like, the Palestinians are the most pampered people in the fucking world. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Do you think, like, let's go into conspiracy talk, man. Do you think there is something more that, does this guy really think this shit, or is there something else going on?
I don't know what he really thinks, because at first, like, at least, like, probably a year ago or so, like, when he was on TV a lot, and he was on, like, Joe Rogan, and when he was on Dave Smith's show the first time or whatever, it seemed like he's a guy who might not actually be lying to you. Like, it seemed like he might be, like, actually saying things that he believes, although it seemed like maybe there were certain things that he just kind of didn't want to say, because he is, like, in that establishment world, and there are things where he probably thinks, well, I can't say this, so I can't say what I actually believe on this particular thing. But now, as far as, like, on the like the Israel question. It's like the JQ and the Israel question. I don't know. Like I think he's probably telling the truth, but he is also just falling in line with the establishment. So I actually think it's both. I think he's legitimately bad on the issue, but he also is in a position where he can't say otherwise, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I feel you. And that honestly makes me feel a little bit better, because, like, I kind of fucked with the dude, and I'd rather, because I've seen the jokes where, like, where he calls Israel or Palestinians the most pampered people, and there's people on Twitter, like, I've made the joke, too, where you're like, yo, how much footage do they have of him fucking kids, dude? That's crazy.
Yeah, they're only pampered in that a bunch of them are having to wear diapers because they're shitting themselves from being bombed by Israel so much.
Goddamn. Yeah, man, so it's like there's part of you that you're like, I'd rather you just be dumb than fucking compromised.
Yeah, and he is, of course, in the Hollywood realm as well, because, you know, he is dating, or he's married to Cheryl Hines, who is definitely entrenched in Hollywood, and she was, like, mad at him for, like, his vaccine stances, and he was out there publicly, and she was like, no, I don't believe this, and, like, she was, like, having to cover her ass, and I think she's going to be back on TV tonight, man. Curb Your Enthusiasm's coming.
Oh, Curb's back tonight.
Yeah, final season. I think it's back tonight. I love that show.
Dude, I just got into that, and I was like, I had one of those huge moments where I go, oh my God, why have I been not, you feel like you're like, why did I not do this? Like, why was I not fucking eating pizza this whole time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is Hollywood shit, but it's legitimately funny, man. It's the show's been funny for its whole duration, so I expect this season will probably be good, too.
Wait, was she, like, legit being, like, my wacky husband, I don't know what he's talking about. She's just trying to cover her ass in Hollywood?
Yeah, I think so.
See, that's wild to me. That's what I like. That's what I appreciate about my lady. She'll fucking die on the hill of every crazy opinion I have. Even if she doesn't fucking believe him.
You got her in line, man. RFK needs to do a better job controlling his hole.
Well, it's fun. My babe's a little bit better than a hole, but I get what you're saying.
But when he talks, she can't hear him, so that's kind of the problem there.
But no, it's funny. My girl goes through the shit because, like, I got into the libertarian shit while meeting her, and then she catches up to me. She's behind me by, like, 4 years, so I'll see her spaz out over a new realization on life, and I was like, I remember when I went through that. After doing your first debate performance, I'm very curious, how has that affected your, like, outlook on this shit, and how are you going to move forward with doing this shit?
Yeah, performance is an interesting way to describe it, because I think in a way, like, it is just a performance. Like, everybody's up there performing and acting, and I went into it being like, I don't want to be acting here. Like, I want to be the one guy who's not, like, bullshitting people. So that's what I tried to do there. And as far as, like, what do I think I want to do in the future as far as this, I have no idea. But I'll at least do a couple of the other state conventions, I guess, and be in a couple more debates. And I have to be at the national one because I'm going to be on the ballot there. I'll be in the running, in the race at the national convention. And maybe based on, like, that debate performance, or that was, like, a coming out party for me, basically. And maybe fewer people actually, like, see me as a joke because of that, even though it was hilarious in a lot of ways. I think it exposed more about my opponents than myself. So I think maybe after that, more people are actually, like, on board with actually, like, wanting me to be the nominee, which is an insane concept. It's insane to even think about that, especially when I have zero funding. And I'm like,
yeah.
I was originally just kind of doing this, like, yeah, fuck it, I'll just do it because why not?
Well, and can I encourage you wholeheartedly to keep doing that? Because it always cracks me up. I want libertarians to live up to the fucking reckless image that we have with a lot of people. Because a lot of people, it's so ironic because a lot of people look at us like these unhinged psychopaths. And it's like, I meet so many libertarians that are, like, put together, buttoned up people. But it's always shocking. It's always shocking how, like, tame people are, especially in the, like, the debates and stuff like that. It's like, you know, we don't all have to be fucking, not Pat McAfee. Who's the other guy?
John McAfee.
Love that guy.
That's why I started, like, paying attention to the 2016 race. because it was John McAfee, and I'm like in the software field, so I remember who he was from like back then, and I'm like, holy shit, like this guy is like, he's in the libertarian race, and he's saying all this crazy shit, and he's like putting out videos where he's like snorting cocaine off of hookers' titties, and like his wife is like one of those hookers. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, I gotta pay more attention to this shit. So I got into it. I was a McAfee guy during the 2016 race. I wanted him to win.
Yeah, no, and I that's why I was for similar reasons, not to fucking jerk you off, but I was like watching your shit, and I'm like, Toad represents this level of chaos that I like, and it keeps the other dudes honest. Did you see the last McAfee documentary?
Was that like the Netflix one that came out like a year
ago? Where the
so?
Dude was literally following him on the fucking boat and shit.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I liked it.
Dude, it was wild.
Yeah.
My favorite part about the documentary is you get to the end of it and you leave with like, there's that 1% of you where like, I don't think that motherfucker's dead. Yeah. I don't think he's fucking dead.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance that he's not dead. Like, we've never seen like the body, or like there hasn't been an autopsy. There's something really weird about it.
Yeah, dude, that dude was littered in weird fucking shit. So, yeah, I think I got everything I wanted out of you about the debate and stuff. I definitely want to encourage you to go to more, to be more of a bent, be more of a menace, have more Jacob Hornberg level meltdowns from people.
I just need to like, I need to kill off some of the other guys. Minecraft. In libertarian debate craft.
Yo, but what are they called? Not the Groiper was Nick Fuentes' dudes. The whatever the fucking character is in Minecraft that kills people.
They're creepers, I think. Is that what they are?
Something like that. I was too old when Minecraft came out.
I haven't really played it, but I think they're called creepers.
I think so, yeah. So you're like I was saying before, you're 1/5 of Tower Gang. And that's a can I just say, you guys, I love what you guys are doing. It's the energy you're putting out in the world. I respect that. I appreciate it. You guys don't always stick the landing, but it's the fucking attempt that I, you know, as a comedian, I respect. How did you guys like form and shit like that? How did you guys get together to do that show?
Yeah, I mean, I might be the guy that's, like, swinging and missing more than everybody else. I'm just, like, I'm really taking swings for the fences, I think, on that show, and I miss a lot of times. When I, like, landed, I can definitely crush some of those, though. I hit some home runs on that show. The way we started it was just kind of weird. Like, it was back, like, during the lockdowns, a bunch of us were, like, way more online than we would have been otherwise, or than we should have been, really. And it hit a point where I think it was, like, late 2020 into early 2021 where like Towers started becoming more popular, and we actually had like some of the guys on our show, like on episode 6 or something, some of the guys like Ace and El Pulpo, who are not on my right side at this point. There's some of the guys who were kind of involved in like the like origination of Towers back in the day, and it might have even started before them. Like, they actually started with like just like N-word Towers and stuff, because it was basically like, Twitter is going to ban us if we like say like some offensive slur or something like that, but we can get around the ban if we string together a series of one-letter tweets. Like, the algorithm like won't pick it up. You can't like report just an N or whatever. So like, what are people going to do? So that's kind of how it started. And then in early 2021, we had a couple of these group chats, and I wound up in one of them that were the Tower Gang group chats, and we were coordinating Towers, essentially, where it would be basically, it was almost like a comic writing room to an extent. The group that I was in one with, of course, Cole, Jose, Clint was in there as well, Nick Ashley, who was on our show to begin with, and Reed eventually was in there as well, and I think Top Lobster wasn't even in that group chat with us. I think eventually he was. He's in there now, but not from the outset, he wasn't. But it was myself, Cole, Jose, Clint, and Nick Ashley, I believe, and then Reed a little while after that. And we were, it was like I said, a comedic writing room where we'd see like a tweet like from some like journalist or politician or something and be like, this is ridiculous. And it was almost always about the COVID stuff, because that was what was going on. And it's like, we're going to troll these guys. And these Towers have like an effect where a lot of the journalists would like shit their pants and like block people and like report people and just really, like, some of them deactivate their accounts
and
stuff.
Wait. I apologize for cutting you off, but the Tower is like
It's a one, string of
one would hit the N, and then the I, and et cetera, yeah. et cetera. Oh, yeah, okay.
We had like a couple of like loose rules where it was basically like, basically don't have any like one person be in the tower more than once, basically. So it has more than more of an effect. Eventually, we got up to the point where we were like regularly doing like 30, 40 letter towers. I think we did have a couple that were like in the 70s. It's just so, yeah, it's so ridiculous. That amount of, like not really coordination necessarily, but it was almost like it like coordinated organically because you're in the group chat and you're saying, this is like how we should respond in tower form to this person. And then we'd spitball it. Somebody would say, no, like this is a little bit funny or like stemming off. And then eventually we'd be like, yeah, that's it. So the each tower kind of was like a combination of like thoughts from like a few different people. I had like decent funny ideas for it, and it kind of got like combined and went through like a little bit of an evolution. Then we'd do it, and you'd know what the tower is going to be, so you'd know what like letter to put in it. If somebody put in the letter before you, well, you can just delete it or whatever and just jump in wherever it is into the next one. It has more of an effect if every single person in there is a different person, because it's like, holy shit, this is just one message, but all like 30 whatever of these people agree with this, and they're all replying to me at once with this reply. So it had like kind of a crazy effect a lot of times in a lot of situations.
I didn't realize it was such a coordinated terrorist attack via Twitter.
Yeah, domestic towerists, sometimes we call ourselves. And then for whatever reason, we decided like, let's just do like a podcast where we're shooting the shit and we like do this, like towering, but we do it in podcast form. We didn't really know what it was going to be at the outset. Like, I know we talked about Twitter drama like too much early on and stuff, but we tried to do it in like a shit posty way, kind of. And we had Clint on like the first episode was me, Clint, Jose. Was Jose on it? He might have been on the second episode. He might have skipped the first one. I think Cole was there, Nick Ashley, and then this other guy Cap, who didn't last very long. Fuck that guy, excuse me. The show kind of like, I don't know, just kind of started hitting its stride like fairly early on, I would say. Where originally we were talking about like towers, we had like a tower of the week segment where it's like, here are the I had a spreadsheet of like all the towers that we did during the week, and I'm like, we did like 118 towers this week, man, and we gotta like figure out which one of these we think is the best or whatever. It's so bad. Eventually we got away from that and we just said like, we're not gonna talk about towers anymore, we're going to try not to talk about politics very much, but let's like, this is going to turn into a comedy show, because that's kind of what it was anyway. Like, it was just kind of like boys hanging out, and we want to like bring back kind of like the feel of like the 90s, where you can just shoot the shit with your boys and you can say whatever you want and not have anybody be offended and say whatever the fuck. And that was kind of what it was. And we were always kind of influenced by Legion of Skanks. So,
Gotcha. Wait, so were you were like a libertarian before like COVID and shit, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, was this like a libertarian group, or did you all just guys happen to be more or less libertarians?
Yeah, like everybody in it was basically like in the liberty sphere on Twitter. Mm. Yeah, so I would say more or less, yeah, everybody was a libertarian, but the people that kind of got attracted to like the towering aspect of it tended to be the people that didn't care about offending people. So it kind of worked itself out that way, where it's like, these are the people who are going to be like the more aggressive like messengers, essentially, and not care as much about what they're saying. And it also kind of just so happens that because like those are the people that don't tend to be offended, those tend to be the people that aren't really on like the progressive side of things either.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it has a way of working out.
That makes sense. Were you as... Dude, it's so. Were you as involved in like the liberty movement or whatever you want to call it before this, or did this kind of like turn into you more being like, ah, fuck it, it's funny, I'll be the LP presidential candidate.
Yeah, and that's basically what happened. Yeah, I wasn't involved in libertarian politics at all. I started following it during the 2016 campaign because I loved McAfee, and it was like the thing that really got me to like actually start looking into like what was going on in the political sphere more was actually Donald Trump, because he stepped onto the scene in 2016 and it was like everybody was like, this is a joke, like this is so stupid, like this guy's doing this. And I thought he was a Democrat because I know he was like friends with the Clintons and stuff, and he's from New York, and I'm like, wait a minute, he's running as a Republican? Like, what is going on here? So that, like, caused me to, like, kind of have to start thinking a different way, and I already thought that I was, like, a libertarian, so I was like, I'm going to look into what's going on with the Libertarian Party here, and obviously McAfee really caught my attention that year, and he was the guy that I was like, yeah, this guy is the guy that I actually want here. Like, he's making a lot more sense, and I started, like, getting into some of the Liberty podcasts that were out there back then, which I think was just really like Lions of Liberty, Tom Woods, Part of the Problem. Like, those are kind of the main three. So I started listening to those. I read like some of the like easier like literature to start off. Like, I read Ron Paul's Revolution, like right around that point. And I read that and I was like, holy shit. Cause I had missed Ron Paul's like presidential runs. And I read his book and I was like, I agree with like everything he's saying in this book here. So like, he's laying out libertarianism. I agree with like all of this, so that must be what I am. So then that's why, you know, I started listening to like those podcasts as well. And then it was like the stereotypical, like 6 months later, I was basically considering myself an anarcho-capitalist, and I'd read Anatomy of the State, and I'd been listening to Dave Smith pretty much every one of his episodes for whatever, half a year at that point.
Yeah.
So, but I still wasn't involved in the political party at all. Like, I believed in the ideology, but I was still like just doing my thing, like,
yeah,
you know, I have a job, I have a life, contrary to what some people might think. So I was just still doing that, even though I was into like the libertarian ideology and stuff, and reading some more of the material, listening to the podcast and whatever. And yeah, this is what I believe. Then when the lockdowns happened, that tended to focus you on it more. Like, you have more time to focus on politics,
yeah.
And it was because everything was just in your face, and it's affecting your life in so many ways. And I think I had a jump start on it just because I was a libertarian for years before that, where even before like the lockdowns happened, I was like, I see what they're doing here. Like, this is going to be like SARS again. Like, they're stoking all the fear about this virus. I was just like, this is bullshit. Like, that was just my initial reaction to it. Like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Like, this is, it started looking really bad. I remember like right before, like, the day that we basically decided that we were going to shut down, like, work, like, the office for 2 weeks or whatever, like, I remember saying, like, this is bad. Like, this is not going to be only 2 weeks here. And, like, the governor was, like, seizing control of, like, the entire, like, transportation system and whatever. And I'm like, this is bad. Like, declaring the state of emergency, bad. And people were like, oh, you're overreacting. Like, I was saying that, like, to people who were, like, progressives and stuff in Boston, too. And they're like, no, you're overreacting. I'm like, am I? So I was just, I was on top of it the whole time, basically, which is what you want for somebody who's, like, the libertarian nominee, I think. I was not a year
yeah,
later
dude.
Still, like, promoting the vaccine or whatever. No, I was in opposition to it the whole time. I knew it was bullshit the entire time.
Yeah, and you're in Boston, right?
I am.
How was that? Was it, like, extra lockdown, or was it crazy during COVID?
I'm assuming it wasn't as bad as New York City, but it was it was definitely not great. It was probably like the typical like lockdown situation that you would have had in many of the blue cities. Like, there were mask mandates at least a couple of different times. Vaccine mandates came down, but the vaccine situation was a little bit different because it almost started happening. Like, it was government coercion, but this is where, like, libertarians get tripped up, because libertarians are like, well, don't you see, like, these private businesses were ahead of, like, the government mandates, and they were, like, mandating the vaccine before the government even did. I'm like, no, like, that's not, like that was not them, like, doing it, like, in a free
yeah.
market way at all. Like, they were doing it because they knew the government coercion was coming, and because they were, like, responding to being propagandized in a major, major way. So the,
yeah.
like, actual, like, mandate, like, didn't even need to happen. Like, they were just responding to that propaganda. So I'm like, this is still bad. Like, this is still government coercion. So, like, most businesses, like, around me, like, they all instituted the vaccine mandate, like, the offices and stuff. My company did once Joe Biden came in and whatever it was. He instituted it for companies 100 people or more, which my company isn't even at that size. We're not at 100 people even still, but my company still was like, we're putting that in, and they tried to force it on me, of course. And I think I'm the only person at the whole company who never got it. Like, I just pushed back on it. I tried to get like exemptions. I tried to get a medical exemption, which I have legitimate reasons for, because I've had a stroke and I have like a couple of different heart issues, and like, there's no way I should be taking this vaccine. I'd already had COVID multiple times as well, so it's like, why would I get this vaccine? I'm in my 30s. Like, none of this makes any sense. But my PCP wouldn't even talk to me at all. Like, I called his office, and they were like, he's not even accepting phone calls about vaccine exemptions. I'm like, what the fuck? So I talked to my neurologist, because I have a stroke specialist. He recommended that I get the vaccine. So I'm like, I'm not getting a medical exemption, basically, because the medical establishment is so, like, in bed with just the overall establishment. They're just an arm of the establishment, essentially, an arm of government. So, like, you're not going to be able to get it that way. So I went with a religious exemption route, and my work denied that. And I'm like, how can you deny that?
Really?
Yeah. They totally denied it. And they're like, no, you have to get the vaccine. So I still didn't get it. And, like, the deadline that they gave me had lapsed, and I still wasn't fired, but I was also banned from the office because I wasn't vaccinated and because I had gone back to the office when it had reopened under like the honor system in summer of 2021 or whatever, and I got banned at that point as well for not wearing a mask in the lobby. And we have these like massive lobbies where you're not even ever close to anybody, and the building turned off my access card without even talking to me. for not wearing a mask. So that happened as well. So I was working from home for a long time, like longer than pretty much everybody else. And then it got into the point into like whatever it was, like February, early 2022 sometime, where that federal court like knocked down Biden's mandate. And when that happened, my company was like, come back to the office. I'm like, what? Like, so it's just over. And they just pretend like none of that even happened. Like, no, we're not even going to talk about it. We didn't try to force you to take an experimental vaccine or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, but I still, like, I fought it, and I was able to not get the vaccine and keep my job. So I guess there is something to be said about that, about just not giving into that bullshit and just standing up. I was prepared to lose my job because I'm like, oh, if I lose it, I'll probably find something else. I mean, I'm in a field where there are a lot of different, like, jobs available in software, so...
Well, that was like the big lesson I learned in fucking COVID, where like when you're in the shit, it feels so fucking heavy. But then like when we got on the other side of it, like, I don't know if we're on the other side of it in certain like totalitarian ways,
might
but
come
like,
back again.
Yeah,
it's,
but
it's
like
an election year.
Oh yeah. They might need an excuse for mail-in ballots.
We're a month out. Lockdown's coming in a month.
But no, it's like, I remember at the time, because the one that really got me, that got me kind of shook was, you know, they're like, oh, like comedy clubs won't let you in and shit like that, which
yeah.
the part that pissed me the fuck off, it's like when you turn 18 and they don't check you at an R-rated movie or some shit, mm-hmm. and you're like, dude, like one time right. they fucking check the thing. And shit like that. And it's like, and then when things sort of die down and people go back to normal, you're almost like, oh yeah. Like, cause in the moment, I remember feeling like, oh, this feels like forever. And that's what like made me make such a poor decision and kind of got a little shook and stuff. But like, that was my big lesson, where it was like, no, dude, fucking keep your head down, stay true. And when you get on the other side of it, like, you're a great example. You got on the other side of it, and they're like, hey, would you like to come back?
Right. Well, there was, yeah, that. And then there was also that aspect of it that you were talking about where, like, the big event venues, and I like to go to sports events. I like to go to comedy shows. I like to go to music events, live music. All of that was, all those, because it's a very limited, like, amount of venues, really. Only, like, several venues for those things, like, in the city, basically. And all of them were instituting vaccine requirements for a period of time, I want to say between, it must have been, like, it started in the fall of 2021, I want to say. And that was actually before the government even came down and instituted vaccine mandates. All the, like, big event places were just doing it. Oh, because they're private companies, bro. So they were doing all that. So I remember there was like a brief period of time where it opened up in like late summer of 2021. So I got to go to a couple of concerts. I got to see Tim Dillon
nice.
At the Wilbur around that time. Yeah, but then all of it, like, here come the vaccine mandate. So it was like, we got to get in like all the shows that you want to go to, like, before the vaccine mandates come in. I thought I might never be able to go to like any of these events in Boston again, because like all the events were had vaccine requirements up until probably, I don't know, maybe I would say like the spring maybe of 2022. I think I didn't go to another concert until like May of 2022 when I went with Lady Liberty, Kate from Australia, if you know who she is. That was the first concert that I went to on the other side of the COVID shit. We saw Alexis on Fire and Fall of Troy.
Oh, nice.
At the Roadrunner in Boston. Yeah, Alexis on Fire, her favorite band. She was up in Boston, so I was like, all right, I'll go. Let's do it.
My link to Alexis on Fire is my favorite band. Their guitarist became my favorite band's lead singer for two albums. Gallows? I don't know if you remember them.
No.
But Alexis on Fire's guitarist, Wade,
okay,
he became the lead singer of Gallows for two albums.
Wow. Is he the like scrawny dude with the beard, or is he the other guy?
No, nah, he's the big boy.
Oh,
he's
okay.
He's the big boy.
Yeah, because they have multiple guitarists there, yeah.
You saw Fall of Troy?
Yeah.
Dude, I got to go see... were they on the full album tour?
No, I don't think so. I don't know them that well, but I think it was just kind of a regular set. They were the opener for Alexis on Fire.
Oh, okay. Because yeah, I got they were doing like the 10th or 20th anniversary of their first album. Me and my boy got to go see them on that. What the fuck? We'll wrap this up in a minute. But you're fucking hip to some good ass tunes. I remember I felt. What the fuck was it? Like, I think you were saying Callous Dow Boys. Yeah. That's where I was like, wait a minute, Toad listens to the Dow Boys?
Yeah.
What's some other shit you're what's some other shit you've been fucking around with?
Oh man, there's like so much. I listen to a lot of progressive rock and
what's like your top guys?
Like stoner metal. Well, I mean, a lot of it's gonna be like old school, like that people have heard of before. Like my favorite band is Rush. So
sick.
So I'm into like the classic like progressive rock, but I had missed out on Rush for a while, man. It was like I just wasn't really into it back in the day, and then I kind of like branched over to it actually from like my emo days. I got into progressive rock through Coheed and Cambria because they're that weird. They're like the only band. They're like
Dude.
That weird bridge between emo and
they
progressive
are.
Rock. Yeah, where I was
they're
like, holy
the gateway.
Shit.
They're the gateway drug for emos to get into progressive rock. I never even thought about that.
Yeah, that's how it happened for me, where I was, like, kind of in the, I listened to a lot of punk emo stuff. I grew up listening to, I listened to, like, the 60s, like, stuff that my dad was listening to, and that kind of got me into more, like, classic rock, but I always got kind of more into, like, more complex stuff than he really liked, but then, like, during the 90s, I was a kid, so I was listening to what we were all listening to in the 90s, really. If you're at least a white boy from the Boston area, you were listening to a lot of, like, alternative rock and grunge, and then you kind of get into, like, some punk, like, through, like, Green Day and stuff. You get into more of, like, the... like actual punk through that. So I was listening to punk, but then I was also listening to like pop punk emo. And then, I started listening to Coheed, like early 2000s probably. And then that was like the bridge where I was like, holy shit. Like I really liked like their more like complex stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this is like, I'm definitely into this. And that like bridged me into progressive rock. And then I finally like went back and started listening to Rush and being like, holy shit, this is awesome. But then I still have like a lot in me that still listens to like the 90s shit. Like I always loved Weezer. So I can't really like get away from it, even though their new shit for the most part has been awful, but I still, I'm still into it. And, I'm into, like, I got into, like, metal, like, in high school, some of the, like, 2000s, like, metal. So I really like System of a Down. But that's kind of, like, getting into, like, more, like, complex stuff as well. Where it was not just, like, some of the, like, simpler metal that I was into. But it was, like, stuff that was kind of bringing in, like, all this weird other shit and, like, Eastern influence and stuff. So I always kind of gravitated, I guess, more towards that, like, complicated stuff. Or at least I started going that way. And I love Queens of the Stone Age as well. They were a band that I got into in, like, the high school years as well. And that... was like, that was the gateway into listening to a lot of like stoner metal and like doom metal and stuff like that. So listen to that shit too.
That's sick. I've been having like a soft hypothesis because I don't know everyone in like the Liberty Spaces music interest, but I know like me, I'm into a lot of heavy music. You're into metal music. Jose, I know, is into like some of the heavier shit. And then, like Tom Woods of all people is apparently, I haven't heard what specific bands he likes, but he's apparently in, and I'm like, and you know, and there's Ben the Emo ANCAP's into a lot of like that kind of, and I'm like, is there a correlation between fucking libertarianism and heavy music? I don't know, dude.
I think there might be a correlation between libertarianism and progressive rock in a way, just because it's like,
I bet
it like adheres to like less boundaries and it tends to be less like corporate really in a way where it's just like progressive rock bands are really just kind of saying like fuck you and kind of doing their own thing. And that really was what defined Rush in a way. Like what I think is their best album, 2112, which actually Rush specifically, they have a lot of like libertarian themes kind of running through their music and themes of like freedom, liberty and stuff like that, because their drummer Neil was like a big like Ayn Rand guy and they kind of all, kind of like got into
he wrote
some
all
of
the
that.
Lyrics, right?
Yeah, he was like their primary lyricist for sure. But 2112 basically is this entire like, I'm gonna belch. like 2112, like the whole it's like this big like concept album basically. Although it does have a second side, but the entire like first side of the album is just the song 2112. But it's like 20 something minutes long, and it's this whole like
really,
yeah, it's a rock odyssey. Yeah,
throw that on my Spotify.
Parts. Yeah, it has to do with this like guitarist essentially who has had his guitar taken away by these like priests of the temple who like are kind of like the government figure here, and they're basically trying to like silence him by taking away his ability to play music, and that like that's what the whole like premise is basically, and he's like trying to like get that back essentially, and he winds up being killed. Sorry, spoiler.
Shit,
you can't defeat the priests of the temples of Syrinx, but yeah, and it kind of has this like sci-fi like vibe to it as well. But I love 2112, but when they created that album, the previous album was like a flop commercially, which was Caress of Steel, which is a pretty heavy like progressive like hard rock album. Rush was doing some hard rock back then too, and their record label didn't like it at all because it didn't have commercial success, and they were like, you have to put out something that's more like radio friendly. And basically, they just said, no, we're not going to do that. Like, we're just going to do whatever we feel like. And
nice.
They're like, here you go, 2112. It's a 20-something-minute-long song. Like, try to play that on the radio.
That's, like, their biggest album, though, right?
Their biggest is Moving Pictures, which came after that, I think, which is that is a radio-friendly album to some extent. But it is still, like, a really good album, too. That's the one that has Tom Sawyer and YYZ and
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Moving Pictures is, their biggest.
Oh, okay. Sick.
Yeah.
Damn,
and then they kind of like dropped off a little bit. Kind of they kind of started like trying to experiment with like the sounds of the time, like as it got into like the 80s and 90s, and I think they were less successful in doing that, but their stuff in like the late 70s and early 80s, and even going back to like their really early days in like the late 60s, early 70s, like all that shit is fucking awesome.
That's sick. I apologize for my lack of eye contact. I just I just loaded up
it's
Russian.
Autism.
Yeah, you got me hyped for Russian Coheed now, because I'm like, Coheed was a band I missed because I was big into like, I don't know. I thought I knew everything, and I was like, his voice is gay. I don't like that. I'm into cool punk rock music, not gay prog rock or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
So
I actually like the high, like melodic vocals. Like you mentioned that a lot of us like heavy music. I like heavy music, but I'm not really into like really aggressive, like screaming vocals necessarily either, because I am a vocalist and I have always had like a high like register on my voice. So I like the higher vocals, and I like to try to sing those vocals. So that was part of what got me into Coheed as well. And then, you know, the bridge over into Rush, and of course, Geddy Lee has really high vocals as well.
Yeah, no, I fuck around with that. I just remember when Coheed was out, I was like too cool for school. So I was more into like punk rock and shit. But yeah, now that I'm older and I can be honest with myself, the high vocals are definitely. Did you ever listen to the Blood Brothers?
Yeah, I think I have. I don't really know them that well, though.
Yeah, they're not prog, but they're kind of like this experimental hardcore, and they have two lead singers who have really high voices, and it's kind of like, it's like a little gay, but it's kind of sick.
Yeah, two of them, that's very gay. I might have to check that out. And I think with Coheed, I think the problem might have been like the way that they were marketed in a way, because they kind of like, the way that they always were, like, releasing their singles and stuff, they were releasing, like, their, like, poppiest, like, most emo stuff kind of as their singles. Then they were kind of, like, lumped in with that. But then it was, like, if you listen to, like, their full albums and, like, all the stuff that they're not releasing as singles, it's like, holy shit, they have a bunch of, like 8-plus-minute-long, like, progressive rock songs here. And it's, like, crazy with, like, multiple albums with different, like, multi, like, track suites on them where all the songs are really long. And they're doing a lot of complicated stuff, a lot of really good guitar work as well.
Hmm. So, did you ever listen to, this is a band I've been talking about a bunch on my music pod lately, but you ever listen to Dance Gavin Dance?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's, like, sort of the new age of progressive metal or whatever the fuck in my, well, it's not really
in, like,
metal,
like post-hardcore kind of, they're in that, like,
yeah, because they kind of, It's this like weird mix where they kind of sound like the Fall of Troy, but then they have like a lot of screaming parts, and there's this whole genre.
Really high vocals. As
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought of when you were saying like prog rock and high vocals. I was like, well, Dance Gavin Dance right now with Tillian has some of the highest fucking vocals. They're a great band to get in for that. Just looking up Swancore in general.
Yeah, Swancore. Yeah, which is like, what does that even mean? It's like,
Your hardcore band sounds like Dance Gavin Dance.
Yeah, it's hardcore that won't kill you. It's Dovecore. I don't know. I have no idea.
No, but man.
As far as like Tom Woods, like he's into a lot of like classic progressive rock as well. And I can pretty much say with confidence, I think his favorite band is Porcupine Tree, which I actually wound up seeing Porcupine Tree sort of with Tom in Boston, just because
really
we both happened to go to their show last September, and I'm standing in line, and all of a sudden I hear from my like right, is that Tom Weeds I see? Because Tom and his wife knew me then as Tom Weeds, because I am the guy who runs the Tom Weeds parody account.
You're Tom Weeds?
I'm Tom Weeds, yeah.
Oh, my God. I remember.
I haven't done anything with that account for, like, so long now, but I told Tom that I was Tom Weeds. He knew me as that and not as Toad for, like, a really long time, because I told him I was Tom Weeds at Porkfest in 2021, I think. And, like, he introduced me to his wife, and she loved the account, and, like, they were like, oh, it's Tom Weeds. So then Tom actually just happened to be at the Porcupine Tree show, which it was like this moment where I was like, holy shit, it's Tom. But I knew that it was Tom, and it just made sense that he was going to be here because he's from Massachusetts. So he does come up from Florida to see like some of the bands that he really likes if they're not playing in Florida. So he came up, and he actually saw Porcupine Tree in Boston and in New York. He came up for both. But he was there. He was in line. I talked to him for like a pretty long time in line and told him who I actually am, that I'm Toad or whatever. So now at least I think he and his wife know me as Toad, at least.
Oh,
finally.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, and it turned out that his seats were like almost like right in front of me. So he was like in the row in front of me, like a little bit to my left. So I got to see Tom Woods in his element there, like rocking out at a prog rock show, Porcupine Tree, which was, that was awesome to see. And the show was pretty awesome too. You can check them out too. They're a British progressive rock band fronted by Stephen Wilson, who he does a lot of solo stuff as well, but he's been getting into a lot of like experimental stuff that I haven't really been into, just because it's not, I don't really consider it to be rock music necessarily for the most part. He's doing a lot of stuff with synths and like electronica and pop, and I don't know what he's doing now, but Porcupine Tree is still awesome, even though I think their bassist was kind of let go from the band prior to when I saw them, because he like didn't contact Steven for a while over the COVID shit or something. Like, I'm assuming their bassist was on the more correct side on that, but I don't really know for sure. But I don't know what exactly happened.
Huh,
there, but
that's weird. Yeah, the progressive rock is definitely a genre I've underutilized, just because like I've always been like, I don't feel like I'm an angry dude, but I'm also a dude who can get angry quickly, so I'm probably an angry dude. Probably just like doing some mental gymnastics to avoid the reality. So yeah. I've always leaned towards the heavier shit, the more aggressive shit. But yeah, no, definitely, I've been warming up over time to a lot of this like progressive rock, because like you were saying with like a band like Rush and Coheed, like it's not just. Because for the longest time, I was like, I just cared about music. I didn't give a fuck about lyrics. But now, it's like these stories that you can get into add a whole other layer to the listening experience.
Yeah, and Coheed has this entire like sci-fi saga that is like the backstory to almost their entire catalog of albums, outside of, I think they released one album several years back that was like a Claudio Sanchez like kind of personal album. But besides that album, like all their other albums are following this like sci-fi story that they have going on there.
That's crazy. Didn't he put out some comic books too?
Yeah, there are like graphic novels, the Amory Wars, that are like the graphical representation of those stories. Yeah, so those, you can have those, and those are kind of like they support the albums in a way, so you can have both that kind of tell the same story in different ways.
That's wild. Damn, dude. I'm getting into Coheed the second this podcast is over. Yeah. All right, man. Speaking of which, I think it's been a good fucking episode. Tell them where they can check you the hell out, and we'll fucking wrap this thing up.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me, man. Tower Gang Toad on Twitter, where you're going to probably be pissed off at everything that I'm tweeting. It's a lot of stupid shit posting and stuff, and maybe some stuff related to my campaign. I don't know. You can find my presidential campaign just by me talking about it, because I don't even have a website for it. But I am seeking the Libertarian nomination for president in 2024. And, of course, you can find me on the Tower Gang podcast, where we have either five or six hosts, depending on if Reed is still alive in New Hampshire. I don't know where he is now, but that is the most offensive comedy podcast on the planet. As you said, you have been on it with us as well, although Cole missed that episode. Shame on him. So you didn't get to experience the full gang, the full gang bang with Cole.
Yeah, I didn't get the full Tower Gang bang, but
you can get Tower Gang banged. You can find us on that. We're trying to mostly focus on the Rumble because YouTube is just going to, like, nuke us. So we use YouTube for live streaming, but we, like, take the episodes down from there. We're somehow still on Spotify. All the episodes get put up after the fact on Spotify. We go live on Rumble. We still go live on YouTube, and we're on Odyssey as well. But Odyssey's kind of taking a back seat to the rest. We wind up uploaded to all the audio platforms as well, I think, still for the most part. And you can also find me on my suicidal sports gambling show, which is Better Off Dead, and I do like daily videos on that, just literally just saying like this is what I'm betting on every single day, and I have not had a good run of over the last like week or so not doing
is that
well.
On YouTube
Better Off Dead is on YouTube. I'm not offensive enough that I have to worry about that one getting nuked from YouTube. Nobody cares. Yeah.
Are you guys just mainly focused? Are you guys putting most of your energy on Rumble with Tower Gang?
Yeah,
I was, because the last episode I did, it was a fucking deep dive in the Las Vegas shooting, and I remember, I was like, I'm not even gonna upload this to YouTube, like, why even fucking bother? But then I'm like, because I think, I definitely want to lean way more into, like, politics and conspiracy on this podcast, so I'm like, maybe I just fucking upload to YouTube as a second thought, like maybe Rumble's the priority on this, but like my music podcast. So yeah, I think with shit like this, like with what I'm doing, what you're doing, like just focusing on Rumble might be the fucking move.
Yeah. Yeah. YouTube. I mean, they deserve to like lose some of their viewership because they're like just nuking so many people.
Well, that's the other part of it where you're like, I'm actually like hoping for a easy weensy town downfall just because you guys are being so gay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, man.
You're rooting against Google, man. So you're going up against some powerful companies and people there.
Yeah, dude. I'll take down Google in my conspiracy podcast. Easy. Yeah. All right, man. Well, this has been fucking great. Thank you so much for doing it. Everyone, go fucking check out Tower Gang. Go do all of Toad's picks, everything. Until next time.
Don't blame me, though. It's your fault if you lose money, not mine.
Exactly. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you for having everyone, thanks for watching. Be good. Be nice. Don't be a dick. Always remember, be about it, bitches. Bye-bye.